This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
From registered providers, and I haven't yet found a provider who sells dog food. So one huge thing if you're going into a planning meeting is to be extremely vocal about making sure that consumables budget is self-managed. Just keep that in mind.
Katie, what does that involve in terms of you posting up the invoices and things like that?
So I also self-manage another component of my plan, so the social and community participation. I can probably hold that for a bit and give you a rest. Like the social and community participation budget I also self-manage, and also like the assistance I have around the house, I self-manage that budget as well. That involves receiving an invoice. I get everything sent to me by email. I then pay the invoice. And at the same time, I have the NDIS portal up and I claim it back straight away. It takes probably a day and a half for that to appear back in your bank account, so it's really quick. And it's really straightforward too. So you barely miss your money while it's gone. And you can do it the other way, actually. If you can't afford to pay the invoice straight up, you can claim it first and then pay the invoice as well. So that's quite helpful. I print all of my invoices. I really think I need to get reimbursed with ink and paper because I don't use it any other time. But yeah, I print all the invoices and also the receipts of my bank transfers and keep them in a box. And I also save all of this electronically and back it up to OneDrive every now and then as well. So there's heaps of records. I believe you can also upload stuff to the portal, like your invoices, if you so desire. I guess going forward, my top tips for success with the NDIS relate to thinking big. As I mentioned before, one of the, it wasn't so much a problem, it was just something I encountered, is I didn't realise that I could be ambitious and I could have big goals in my plan, basically. I wasn't thinking outside the box of what I was usually able to do. But I would encourage you to think about what opportunities you want in life. Try to think about what you would do if you could, if you didn't have that vision impairment that can sometimes put obstacles in our way. What sort of things would you want to do? And even if you don't achieve that actual thing, you might come a little bit closer to it, or you might find something sort of similar to what you're thinking about. So it gives you opportunities we've never had before. My second top tip would be to give yourself time to learn about the scheme. It's pretty massive. And it takes years to get your head around it. And I'm actually proud of how much I've learnt over the years, getting the plan to where it is today. So give yourself that time. The next one is be assertive. Unfortunately, one of the biggest problems with the NDIS is that it suits some people. Other people who cannot self-advocate get left behind. So if you have a voice, you need to use it. Otherwise, you will get left behind. And you need to tell people when there's a problem with your plan, because it won't get fixed otherwise, unfortunately. So you need to be that squeaky wheel. And when I say this too, it's not like you have to do it all yourself. Get yourself an advocate. Get on to Disability Advocacy Finder, just Google that, and you can find advocacy providers in your area. If you're dealing with a review, I would suggest you get yourself an NDIS appeals officer, because they are trained to deal with the reviews, they deal with them all the time, and they know how to do the AAT reviews. And the beauty of an advocate is they are there to save you time. I've assisted heaps of people with complaints and reviews and things who are just getting along with their everyday life. And, you know, I would just check in with them and get their instructions, go and do a task for them and come back and report so they can get along with their life while you're doing that work. My NDIS problems, I have had some of them, but as I've said, you just have to be vocal. You have to think about the best way to get attention. Always try to get in contact with your actual planner, if at all possible. The person who signs off on your plan, you don't always have that information, so you might have to work your way backwards a little bit, contacting your LAC, LAC, or going through the dreaded 1-800 number. Good luck with that. I think that is pretty much my top tips and my advice. It's been an incredibly positive experience for me, and I really think as visually impaired people, we are actually one of the lucky groups in this system. So I'd encourage you to make the most of it and enjoy it.
Great. Thanks very much, Katie. That's really great information. So anyone, if you've got any questions in mind, keep them around appeals or around Katie's individual experience. And I would reinforce, having just gone on to the NDIS too, the benefit of using a support person, an advocate. I used an engagement person from Seeing Eye Dogs, or Vision Australia Seeing Eye Dogs, and it saved me a huge amount of time and hassle. So thanks very much, Katie. All right, we'll move on to Giselle Misnich, here to give her perspective of the NDIS. Thanks.
Thank you, Giselle Misnich, and thank you, Kevin. So I came into the NDIS, I applied in January 2017, 6 months before the scheme was due to roll out in my area, which is inner west Sydney. And I did so because I wanted to get into early admission. So you can do that if you, especially like me, I was turning 65 this year, in the middle of the year when the scheme was rolling out into my area. And I thought it would be better to try and get early admission. So in January 2017, I applied. I was accepted into the scheme in February 2017. Like Katie, I just got a report from my GP and from my ophthalmologist, and that was quick. It then took 8 months before I actually got my first interview. So at that
8 months?
8 months. Oh. 8 months. From February 2017 to October 2017. So be patient, as one thing. But I also called the NDIS several times because things do drop out of the system, so be mindful about that. So don't just sit there and wait. Do call from time to time if you think it's been too long. In October 2017, I had my first interview. It didn't go that well. I did have an advocate there from Guide Dogs, and she was very good, but the local area coordinator just took a very quick thing and said, well, I just need somebody to take you for a little walk, take your dog for a little walk, you know, and you'll be right, you'll be a thing, you know. And when I read the report, it's like, this isn't me, you know, like, this is, who is this all about, you know? It's a shame that we don't get to vet the report they write about us before it goes to the NDIA and the planners that decide what you're going to get in your plan, because if we did that, we could correct any errors or omissions in the report. What it then took, also, I was just coming to this thing, when I had the first interview, I was pushed into plan management. I was told it's too difficult to self-manage. I was told, you know, it's easier for you, you know, you don't have to go on the portal, you don't have to worry about invoices. You know, we can put you onto a plan manager. So I accepted that. And I got a plan manager that was recommended by my local area coordinator. And I applied, and I got a phone call from the plan manager one night, 8 p.m. She said, my name is so-and-so, and I'm from this plan management company. I won't name them here. And so I had a doctor, and what's important here, in relation to guide dogs, I've got a pet insurance for my guide dog. And so I asked her, all right, so how will you manage paying the pet insurance policy? Because that's one thing you can get paid by the NDIS. You can get your pet policy paid by the NDIS. And she says, oh, no worries, you can keep paying that and just send us the invoice and so on. So I said to her, okay, can you email me all that information, you know, all the planning that you're going to provide for me, like a service agreement. She emailed me the next day and said, hi Giselle, so-and-so here, just ask your service providers to email me at so-and-so at so-and-so, you know, .com, and call me on my mobile if there's any questions. No company name, nothing. And I just said, no, no way. No. And so then I asked for another meeting, and I decided to self-manage. And I can't look back on that. It's not for everybody, but I'm not looking back on self-management. I'm self-managing my entire plan. When that happened 2 weeks later, they removed the guide dog's money. I had $3,069 for my guide dog. They removed that from the plan. It was then a battle of 6 months to try and get that back. Right? When I did get it back, I then asked for back payment, which I did get. I got back pay. So don't, like Katie said, you need to be assertive. I've had 4 reviews of my plan in 1 year. Right? So, and it's because I am an advocate, and because I've had good support from my family and from fans and so on, that I've been able to manage that. But get that support. You know, don't just accept your first plan. If you're not happy with it, you know, appeal and come in onto the list. You can get advice from people on the list as well. With my guide dog money also, because they said the reason they had risk on the money is that because I didn't lodge a quote. I had, but you know, since they lost it, I wanted to get a quote from the vet. And the vet put it out to, instead of $3,069, my vet put it out to $3,914. And they accepted that. Right? I don't know, Katie, you got $2,500 and they're consumable. My guide dog maintenance, and this is not harness and guide dog training or anything, this is just guide dog maintenance. It covers the pet insurance, it covers food, and so on. I actually have now $3,914, but it actually is put into assistive technology. And so we are all getting very different experiences as to where our money is budgeted and allocated and how much we're getting. And that is problematic in one way. But again, like there's just no rule that says 2,500 or 2,069. You know, if you think you need X amount, go for that. And I got it. Right? That's the thing. It's just go for it and I didn't have any support coordination money, so it was one of my appeals. I now have a support coordinator. She's very good. She's a good advocate for me as well. And it's made a huge difference to me. One thing about self-management I mentioned. Yes, using the portal, if you're quite good with your computer, is quite easy. As Katie said, it's simple. It's quick. You get the money back immediately. What you have to be careful about when you're self-managing is the service providers that you're using. A lot of people think it just requires an ABM. There's more to it than that. I took two months from the day I was accepted to be self-managed to the day that I used my first service provider, just informing myself. I called the Australian Taxation Office, I called the state insurance regulator. I wanted to know what it involves in terms of, there's two different ways you can self-manage. You can self-manage and, you know, hire your own staff, or you can hire independent contractors. I chose to use independent contractors because you didn't have to worry about insurance, you didn't have to worry about public liability, but you need to make sure that the service providers that you use have those covered. All those independent contractors you use, you know, have insurance cover as well. So not just an ABM. And that takes time, but again, the information is out there now. And so I'm not looking back on self-management. The other thing I found out from my support coordinator was that you can use people under 18 who don't have an ABM. And so, for example, recently I needed my guide dog minded for one night. I was going to a concert. It wasn't really proper to take him. I got this young 16-year-old, paid her $15 an hour under my NDIS money. And she was really happy about that. And, you know, sweet, she doesn't have to have an EBN. You know? So there are things like that you can use. And she's also been doing data entry for me. And so, you know, I'm using my funding as best as I can.
And how did she invoice you then? That
she invoiced me, so I showed her a sample invoice, so I got the name of the person, invoice number one, guide dog minding, $105, she had to keep the dog overnight, and brought it back the next morning, and yes, so, you know, like, it was simple as that, simple as that, and then I went to claim it, paid her, and that was it, you know? I don't print my invoices, not Katie, but I do keep a folder with all my invoices and receipts in an electronic format, and I do back them up, like Katie, so that if anything happens, I do have copies that I can print if they're required, and copy them and required. The other thing you've got to keep, so I keep records of all my payment requests, and there's a thing called the PRN on the portal, which is the payment request number. Make sure that you note that down with your invoices and receipt, because apparently that's the way the NDIS, if they audit you, will ask you, you know, PRN number, payment request number, such and such. They might give you the date, you know, give us the records for that thing. So they're not going to give you an entire audit of all your payment requests. They might just ask you a sample ones here and there, and you've got to make sure you've got the records for those. You've got to keep your records for 5 years. And again, electronically, that's fairly straightforward. If you print, I think it would become really difficult to do that, you know? But I don't think, yeah, so that's what I'm doing, is just keeping electronic copies of everything. I don't know if there are any other questions. I just want to give time for questions because there's so much to talk about. And I think it's a shame that people over 65 can't get the NDIS. Yeah. And that's a point that I think we need to raise as guide dog handlers. You know, guide dog handlers over 65 have got as much needs as me to have the food covered, the insurance covered, and so on. Now, be mindful that I've got a friend who's overseas. She doesn't have a guide dog, but she's been able to get technology under the My Aged Care scheme. So we haven't explored yet the inequities in the My Aged Care scheme. And the fact is that, you know, it may be possible to extend some of the services and technologies and so on that are in the NDIS to people in the My Aged Care. Because certainly from an anecdotal point of view, there are people accessing that.
That's great.
Just questions, maybe.
Yeah, we'll go to questions in a little while. Thank you very much, Giselle. And I do note this morning, one of our attendees said that, you know, the over 65s, it is just straight up discrimination,
yeah,
in terms of reasonable supports, etc. Mm-hmm. So that's something that we will assist BCA and other organisations to continually advocate for fairness. Relevant of age. Alrighty, so we'll move on now to Zoom, and Crystal Malcolm is another individual on a plan, and really like to hear her perspective, and then we'll move to Emma Bennison, who will give us a more overall view of BCA's overall coverage of the NDIS, and also what they can do to assist us. So, thank you, Crystal.
Okay. I'm assuming you guys can hear me. I'm sure Greg will let me know if you can't. But I guess I wanted to talk about how the NDIS, I guess, what sort of difference it has made since myself and my husband and we became participants in the NDIS. Because I think that's probably where we're at now is, you know, to really, it's good to be able to reflect on, you know, the types of service that we had access to before and how we're actually able to use the NDIS to do other things now. So I'm on my second plan. I'm about 8 months into my second plan. So I've been on the NDIS for coming up to 2 years in February. And it's, I guess the ways that it's made a difference for both of us really is that we've both been able to self-manage our plans. And that means that we have to pay all of our own invoices and, you know, claim the money back through the portal and all that type of stuff. But it also frees us up to be able to use services that aren't the, I guess, traditional disability support services that we've all been used to. So, because when you're self-managed, you don't have to, or self-managed and plan managed, you don't have to use services that are registered with the NDIA. You can still use them, but you can also use mainstream other types of services as well. So, we have very different plans. I have quite a lot of core funding, and I use that funding to help me with things relating to my disability and things around parenting, for instance. So my son, Jaden, plays soccer, and so if I can't get myself to his soccer matches because it's not on public transport or it's not our local work around or something, then I can use my NDIS core funds to pay for a support person to drive us to the game. And that has the, that also means that I can use that person to take some photos for me to share with our family.
All right. Just while we're checking if we can get Crystal back on, does anyone have any questions or anything for Giselle and Katie while we're trying to get this technology fixed?
I just have something that I'd like us to think about, I think, is about the way that guide dog agencies, you know, how we're actually funded for our dogs. You know, are we owning them like a piece of technology, or are they on permanent rent? And if they're on permanent rent, don't we need to start thinking about perhaps getting them funded year on year rather than one lump sum at the start? You know, I'm wondering whether that might help schools perhaps, you know, ensure that they are putting out high quality dogs that need to stay working for a long time.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
sorry,
some of the things I'm
Crystal.
Starting to think about.
Yeah.
Thanks, Patty.
Well, I'll do Kathy. Hello, it's Kathy. I just wanted to bring a point up about the NDIS with our equipment, the guide dog handle and the harness and all that sort of stuff. Now that we're under NDIS, which is federal money, and the schools are still thinking state,
So Emma, they're just taking some questions. Then I might
can
get Kevin to go to you, so you don't have to hang around.
Okay. From wherever we wish. And if so, why do we now need to still ask? I'm not trying to be difficult. Just something I want everybody to think about is why do we need to ask our schools permission to put a particular harness or handle onto a dog that may be far more suitable than what they're presently providing? After all, it is our funding, our money, our choice. And on top of that, I'd like to also raise an issue that if you're on a wait list and the schools are still thinking statewide, but it's actually federal money, if they don't have a suitable dog in your particular state, why are they not now asking, and this is a question for the schools to think about and for us to advocate for, why are they not asking, well, I don't have a particular dog in this state for you at this present moment. Would you mind if I asked XYZ state and see what their pool is like?
Being able to apply at the same time. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yes, no, look, both of you have raised.
And this is issues that is brand new to all of us.
Yes.
But
yep.
I am finding when I ask and raise these questions to schools, I get the door closed.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe something DGA can assist you with.
I would like very much for this discussion to be put on the table.
Yeah.
And just a thought.
You have done that, thank you. We will keep focused on the NDIS for the minute, though. But certainly, you've been heard. Yes, it is, but it's also a broader advocacy issue around servers.
Chris, put your hands up.
Would like to meet Emma?
Yeah.
Okay. While Zoom is working, we'll go to Emma now. We've lost Crystal, unfortunately, but we'll go to Emma while we've got her online.
Hi, everybody. I hope you can all hear me. Thank you very much for having me today. I'm sorry that I couldn't be there in person. I would have loved to have been there in person, but it's my husband's birthday this weekend, and he is incredibly supportive of all the travel I do, and I felt like I needed to be in Hobart for that this weekend. So I just wanted to talk, I guess, a bit more broadly about some of the work that BCA has been doing in relation to advocacy around the NDIS. I should add before I go any further that I actually couldn't hear very much at all of what Giselle or Katie were saying. So I'm sorry if I in any way repeat the points that both of you have made. I guess the areas in which BCA has been strongly advocating, and in many cases alongside the blindness service providers, have been in relation to, firstly, making sure that people actually get not only their plans, but any information that relates to the NDIS in the format of their choice.
A lot of people have been back to us
as a problem that they don't get correspondence in their preferred format. It just comes out to them in print, and in fact that's happened to me recently as well. And that it doesn't just happen once, so every time people are actually trying to get information out of the NDIA, it continues to come to them in print, and then the onus is on the individual to go back and actually request that information in their preferred format. And that's not really a satisfactory scenario. Really what we're working towards is a scenario where people have a profile and they can nominate what their preferred format is, and from there on in they receive information in their preferred format in the way that hopefully those of you who receive information from BCA receive your information in your preferred format as much as possible. So the NDIA is very much aware of the issue. They assure us that they're working on it and they are trying to fix it. So, we hope that will occur. There are many areas, I should say, where we're advocating around the NDIS and improvements to it. But the other major area that I wanted to talk about, because I think it's relevant to all of you and to this conference, is the area of delays in getting adaptive technology support through the NDIS. And of course, guide dogs, or dog guides, I should say, are included under adaptive technology, under the adaptive technology area. So, in actual fact, I met with the CEO of the NDIA a couple of months ago now, and have recently received some information in relation to improvements that the NDIA are going to be making in the coming months to their adaptive technology assessment and planning processes. So I thought I might share that with you, because whilst not all of it is dog guide related, it's certainly information that I think will be of interest to you and hopefully will answer some of your questions. But before I do that, I just wanted to add that, of course, while we're talking about the NDIS today, obviously my aged care is also a significant issue for a significant proportion of our community, and so I don't want to let that fall off the edge. And I just wanted to mention, before I did get into the information from the NDIA, that BCA has quite a significant amount of information on our website in relation to the NDIS and information that might be of interest to people who are looking to get onto the scheme, or even for people who are going back to have their second or third plans, there might be information and resources of interest. So I'd encourage you to visit our website, which is www.bca.org.au, and have a look at those resources. And I also wanted to mention that in the coming weeks, we will have similar resources in relation to my aged care up on our website as well. And so I'm really always concerned to make sure that that people over the age of 65 are not left out of this conversation, because that's hugely important. So going back now to the information from the NDIA, the NDIA has provided some specific information to BCA, essentially, firstly, acknowledging the delays and the issues that some people have had in relation to getting adaptive technology. We've heard from some people that they've waited up to a year to get their adaptive equipment. We've also heard from some people who have had significant delays in getting dog guides funded as well. So this information is certainly relevant. So they acknowledge that, and they acknowledge the impact on people's lives and apologise for it. And they also want to assure people that, I guess as the scheme takes on more people, they recognise that sometimes their processes just haven't kept up, and they know that they really need to fix that. And one of the things they've done is they've started to try to reduce the need for assessments and quotes wherever possible, where they can. And so I guess in terms of the nuts and bolts of what they're doing, since May there's been a new low-cost technology policy, which most of you may already be aware of, where in fact you can actually receive up to $1,500 worth of funding in your plan for low-cost technology without an assessment or a quote. The other thing they're looking at is, things like timely replacement, which of course does actually have an impact on dog guides. So they're looking at allowing replacement items to be sourced quickly without needing reassessment or multiple quotes. And that would definitely be applicable to, retiring dog guides. So that's going to be trialled this month and hopefully rolled out thereafter. They're also looking at technology repairs and calculating an appropriate budget for repairs and maintenance in people's plans. So that again is to be finalised this month. So hopefully that we'll start to see that rolling out. They're also looking at improving the tools to calculate appropriate funding for reasonable and necessary supports to reduce the need for quotes. Those of you who've had an NDIS plan will know that there's quite a lot of reliance at the moment on quotes and sometimes multiple quotes, and it gets very complicated. So that will hopefully reduce the time it will take to process requests. Those are going to be, introduced progressively over the next few months for different adaptive technology types, so you'll start to see that over time. And the other one, which I think is really quite pertinent to dog guides, is they're actually reviewing their assessment templates. So the templates that are being used to assess the need for adaptive technology, and particularly for dog guides. And in fact, the sector, we've been working with the Australian Blindness Forum, and which includes service providers and ourselves and other sector players to try and make sure that template is correct and actually, works in terms of both the service provider experience but also the consumer experience. So we'll continue to keep you updated on that. And then the second part of it, I guess, is that they're looking at establishing a national adaptive technology, what they're calling remediation team, to try and help resolve some of the delays in planning and plan implementation across the NDIS. So the team's trying to track requests from participants and service providers to try and sort of get rid of some of these bottlenecks that we've been seeing and that are causing people huge amounts of difficulty in terms of their day-to-day life. So that's some of the work that they're doing at the moment. I guess in addition, BCA is continuing just to try to work with individuals to assist people to get their plans up and running, if they need appeals and so forth, to go through that process, we can assist with that. We have Kristen Nusby, who's our support linkages officer, and Kristen is now working nationally through a telephone-based service. So if people are looking to get onto the NDIS or My Aged Care and you need one-to-one assistance, so you just need to have a conversation with someone to get some advice, Kristen is definitely the person to speak to. If you have an advocacy issue where something's not working and you need assistance to fix it, then our advocacy officer, Ricky Chapman, can assist you with that. So there are a number of opportunities for you to get assistance, and you don't have to be a member of BCA to take advantage of that assistance either. So I'm really happy to take questions. This connection is actually really noisy, so I'm not going to speak any longer now, but I just wanted to thank you all again for having me, and hopefully that information has been of some assistance. Thanks.
Perfect, Emma. Great.
Thanks very much, Emma. That's great advice and really good support that we can access, and it's great to hear that BCA's got direct communication with the NDIA, because those delays are quite long, as Giselle said, and I've also experienced. My plan was approved in August, and I've been using the funds, but I am still waiting for the technical team to actually approve my dog. So my replacement dog, Kane, is 11 and a half, so it's getting really urgent. So that's
Crystal,
good news.
Crystal's yep. back.
Oh, good. Okay. Now, Crystal is back, so we'll just jump onto her just before, so she can finish her presentation while Zoom is cooperating with us.
I'm going to assume you can hear me again. Really sorry about before I had no idea what happened. I was talking for a long time before it told me that it had disconnected me. So basically, I was talking about the, I guess, the real tangible difference that the NDIS had made for me since becoming a participant, compared to the types of services I was able to access before the NDIS. Basically, what it's meant for me, what it's basically meant for my family, I suppose, and for me as a participant, is that I can be more flexible and more personalised with the types of services that I access. So, for instance, I've been able to choose the types of support people that I work with on a regular basis, and then I can also choose what types of tasks they help me with. So at the moment I have somebody that comes and works with me once a week on a Friday for several hours, and on Wednesdays I use that time to do the jobs, I suppose, that I haven't been able to do independently throughout the week. So it might be, you know, something that requires somebody to drive me there because there's no access to public transport. Or it might be that I need help filling in a bunch of forms. It might be that I need help with, you know, checking the clothes for staying, the school uniforms, things like that. So that's something that's made a real difference for me in terms of the types of services that I have available to me now that I didn't have before I became a, before the NDIS. As far as the guide dog goes, we had money allocated in the plan to pay for things like pet insurance. We use that money to pay for the dog's food, for equipment that we need for the dog, and for grooming, that type of thing. And can't remember what else I was talking about now. As far as the traditional service providers that we've always had access to, in fact, seeing our dogs or guide dogs and Vision Australia, that type of thing, what we did was we got
guide dogs to meet with us, and between us we worked out, well, over the next 12 months I'm going to need to learn 3 or 4 new routes. So, you know, potentially my office is relocating. I'm going to need to get to the hospital because I need to go to the hospital for appointments throughout my pregnancy and a couple of other things. And so we were able to come up with a number of how many hours we thought that would be. So that, you know, that's 20 hours. So when I put in my when I had a planning meeting, I had that document there to give to them to say, this is how many hours and this is how much it's going to cost for that service. And so that meant that money automatically got put into my plan. What else? I'm also able to use some of my core funding to help with things like getting my son to his soccer games if it's not at a field close to home or one that we don't know how to get to on our own. And so I can pay a support person to take me to those soccer matches, and then they can also take some photos for us or videos of the game and that type of thing. As far as, I'm trying to think what else we've been able to use it for. So during our planning meeting we identified that there were some modifications that needed to be made to our home to make it more accessible to us. And there's a bunch of questions in the planning meeting around, you know, do you have difficulty accessing, and it gives you a list of the different areas of the home and you can say yes or no. So we said yes to the kitchen and to the exterior of the home. So that meant that it generated some funding to pay for an assessment with an occupational therapist to identify what types of modifications can be done to the home to make it more accessible to us. So that's been really, really good as well. And then there's one more point that I was going to make, and I've lost it now. I guess we, when I both chose to self-manage our funding, and so that's meant that we can be more selective about the types of services we use. We're not restricted to only services that are registered with the NDIA. So we can use a mainstream cleaning company to help with housekeeping, or to help us with garden maintenance and gardening, that type of thing. And it's meant that we can use services like HireUp or Better Caring is one that I'm registered with at the moment, where you can put up a job that you need done and you can hire support workers to do that job for you and to work with you on that particular area. And so that's meant that, you know, if something unexpected has come up, we're still able to find the support to help us with that. So I think that's probably the main thing that the NDIS has done for me, is meant that I can be more flexible and a little bit more, not impulsive, but, you know, it's freed me up to be able to deal with those unexpected things that happen. I hope you guys can hear me this time. I think you told me I'm doing things dropped out, so I'll wrap up there just in case it does drop me out again.
Right, well, Crystal gave us some broad range of ideas about different ways you can think about and use your supports, so that's good. And I really like the planning ahead approach too for your next round of funding, getting some evidence that you need certain hours, which then gets automatically funded. So that's great. We've had some really different but valuable information from all of the speakers. So now it's open to the floor to continue the discussion or questions around the NDIS.
I'm coming to Chris Scott.
They can hear you when you're on mic.
Oh, can they really?
Just in answer to Kathy's question about it's federal money, yes, it is federal money, but it is signed off by all of the states, and the states administer the spending of the NDIS. So what is signed off in New South Wales may not necessarily be signed off in Victoria or Queensland. So what can be bought with NDIS money depends on what the state signed off on.
I've got it from my state politician, Kathy.
I'm
going to Kathy for rebuttal. I've actually purchased services from New South Wales, and I've purchased services. I can purchase services from Victoria. I can purchase services from anywhere in Australia, as long as I have an agreement with the person that I employ. So and I can get equipment from anywhere I like. I've actually got equipment from overseas.
I'm not one of the body bodies.
So the equipment comes under technology, which applies to guide dogs, and also the harness, the handle, and everything else. Same thing. Sorry, Chris.
No, that's good clarification. And look, that is an issue that DGHA can explore. Cathy and Penny both on the committee now, so we can explore that possibilities of being more flexible in terms of a national approach, and also the way dog guides are funded. They're very valid points, so you can explore them. Okay,
yep,
others?
Okay, hang on. Emma wants to make a point, if she can.
Oh, good. Yes, Emma wants to make a point.
Look, I did hear, I think it was Cathy's question earlier. That was one of the only things I did hear earlier, so thanks, Cathy. But I just wanted to say that my understanding is that there are quite good relationships between certainly some of the dog guide schools to ensure that they're getting dogs, that are the best match for people. I know, for example, in Tasmania where I live, I know that they do national searches for dogs. So I think it does happen. Maybe it's not well publicised, but maybe it doesn't happen everywhere. But I certainly know of places where it is happening. So and I suspect will probably continue to evolve by necessity as the NDIS rolls out, because there's going to be hopefully greater demand.
Thanks, Emma. Great. Others?
That's good.
This is a question to Giselle. Giselle, what kind of... I've got a planning meeting to go to in December, and I've started collecting documentation. So what kind of things did you turn up with for your first planning meeting?
I'll come to Giselle.
That's Nadia, Emma and Crystal, if you don't recognise the voice.
Yeah, Nadia, I joined up with a library full of documents, all of which were slapped on the desk by the local carrier area coordinator. She didn't take one single document. I then emailed them to the NDIA. I then got a lawyer friend to actually take them in person to the NDIA. It didn't make one iota of difference. But that's not everybody's experience. That's not saying don't turn up this document. One really important document is your OT report. And you can choose your OT. But the trick is you actually have to, if you want to get an OT that you pay, that's occupational therapist. You actually have to wait for your NDIS plan to be approved and get your money under one of the capacity building to pay for an OT report, and then it then becomes really complicated. I think probably it would be good for us to have, when we're applying for the NDIA or the NDIS, is to have an OT funded pre-claim, because that's a key. That is a key document. And I got my OT report from Guide Dogs, so I didn't have to pay for it. But I had to negotiate with the OT person from my dog at least four or five times before I got an OT report, which I felt was what I wanted. The other thing is quotations. I waited also, like Kevin, I waited several months before I got my assistive technology. I did have quotes, but they were renewed for several months, and then they were funded eventually. So quotes, but a notary report is essential.
Great. Thanks, Giselle. Other questions or comments?
That's a question I think for Katie or anyone you can answer this. You have dogs funded. If you, for any reason, need to return the dog, whatever it may be, it was a bad match, the dog got sick, God forbid the dog died, or whatever, it needed to be early retired and you need to get another dog funded under the NDIS, is that covered? Because that's like, you know, $50,000 within, you know, a few months or a few years of each other. I hope to get 8 to 10 years out of the dog, but if that doesn't happen, will the NDIS multiple fund successor dogs?
I'm coming to Katie.
I'm glad you asked that question because that did happen to me with the first dog that was funded in its entirety. The dog developed a health condition and had to be retired at 6 weeks. I'd had it for 6 weeks. I think that there's no simple answer to this question. I think it depends on the schools. And again, it's one of those matters where we need clarification from the schools. Because it's not an NDIA thing, it's whether or not the schools are prepared to fund the dog again. With me, they did, because it was 6 weeks, it was a ridiculously short period of time. So they basically did all of the training again and provided the dog free of charge, and I call her my warranty job.
Right.
Lester wants to comment.
Thanks, Lester.
I can't comment on that example specifically, but there is a working, the NDIA has put together a working group with representatives from quite a few agencies, from Guidance Australia and Vision Australia. So a few of the questions that popped up today are on the table and they're being discussed. The most recent one that I joined, they are talking including in terms of simplifying or changing actually the AT assessment form that they are currently doing, which is quite in depth. So they're looking at doing something specific for dogs, and that would be helpful. The other thing that came up is about the, more or less, yeah, the warranty. The dogs being considered a piece of equipment, there are likely, for instance, ACCC rules that apply to the situation. So then it'll be absolutely up to the dog agencies to figure out what it is, how it fits, and is it, what the time frame is, for instance. It's one of the current conversations. But there's a lot happening. The other thing just because it happened this past week, we had a plan approved. Someone had a plan approved and it already came in a new format. So that's something else that the NDIS has done, is that, it came as a PDF, so it, not in that type of file format, but the design of the plan is actually different now, and it has a little bit, it's simplified in some areas, and it tries to provide more information about how the plan is to be read and how the plan is to be used up front, rather than, so having it in writing in the actual plan, so there's some interesting things, but there's a lot of, can still be discussed a lot. And, positive that they put up, that they figure out that dogs are actually quite complex, and then they're looking over to figure some of those things out.
Okay, Rowena, so there's no answer. Katie's got the closest answer, and that is it looks like it's on an individual basis at the moment. But given that's good news that the agencies are working on it, and also Emma mentioned that she's had direct conversations around this as well with the NDIA. So it will be a development going forward.
Hi, it's Kathy again.
Yes, Kathy.
Something that helped me recently in a review, and it may apply to some people, may not, was that I was originally, and just an example, I was originally classified as blind with other disabilities, right? And I was given X amount of funding because of that, because it's capped. And I found this out only recently. However, it was mentioned to me in an advocacy group because I wear hearing aids and it was impacting on my life quite severely. But my classification, my primary disability, should no longer be blind. It should be deafblind, because it's not a matter of a medical model. It's a matter of how it impacts on my life. So I don't know how to go about that, but I went to my professionals and I got supporting letters, and I also found out there's a thing called a functional capacity assessment, which is done by a qualified OT who is able to do it in relationship to NDIS. So they looked at me from head to toe. They assessed me in the sense that they looked at all things related to transport, my independence in living. They looked at me in my social capacity. They looked at every single aspect of my life. And they looked at me from a holistic perspective, being conscious that my primary was blindness. However, the impact of my hearing is starting to creep in, and I may need to be reclassified. And I was actually successful in that, presented that recently in my review, with supporting documentation from all my other professionals. And I'm now classified as deafblind. Being reclassified as deafblind, I'm no longer capped. I'm considered a complicated case. under the NDIS, and I'm not capped, which means my funding, which is very big difference, will be done on an overall assessment of how all my disabilities impact on my life. It's not going to be pushed aside anymore as a sideline.
Well done.
I don't know whether that's beneficial to anybody, but I just thought I might let you know that should anybody be in a position where they're not sure, the functional capacity assessment is written in plain English, but also absolutely outlines every single solitary thing and says what areas you need support in and what areas you're doing quite well and you may not need support in. And they're not allowed to ignore it. It basically spells it out for the planner or the lab.
Great. Thanks very much, Kathy. Giselle's got a comment around that one as well.
Annette had a question, and so does Ben, but I'll come up to Giselle.
Yes, thanks.
I'm coming from the front, Giselle.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Because, yeah, I'm in the same boat as, because I've developed hearing impairment. And when I had my interview, even though I'd mentioned it, and also in my plain notes I've mentioned it, my GP and two audiologists, two ear, nose, throat, specialists, two GPs had mentioned it in the reports. And again, it was ignored. I didn't know at the time what this functional, what was it called?
Functional capacity,
I think it would have been made a huge difference to me. And certainly when I have my review again, I'm actually going to go for that because I'm in the same boat, that it impacts me. And the local area coordinator said, I just thought it was a little thing. It meant also that, for example, I needed hearing aids I wanted hearing aids which you didn't have to, they have to charge and go, which you didn't have to fiddle about with the little battery. Now, they were rejected by the NDIA. And when I went to my third audiologist on Australian hearing, she said they should have been accepted. But rather than put me through having to go to a tribunal to try and fight for them, she put me in the, I think what Kathy mentioned, the complex adult program. So I'm now a complex adult and now I get my hearing aids through Australian hearing. So yeah, sometimes you have to accept those labels in order to fit into the system. Just a couple of other points, first of all, I've got the mic. I've been raised about, I had two complaints for the Commonwealth Ombudsman, and I got a call from them, they're following my case. It's a really good avenue. If you've got any concerns about your plan and you don't want to go through the NDIA directly, lodge a complaint to the Commonwealth Ombudsman. They will then direct you if you need to go to the tribunal, if they can resolve it, or you might need to go to the new commission, the Quality and Safeguard Commission. But talking to the Commonwealth Ombudsman again this week, she actually urged me to tell people in my community, contact the Commonwealth Ombudsman. They're there to assist you if you've got any concerns about the process of your claim. It's free, it's quick, and it's very, it was fantastic for me. They resolved two complaints very quickly.
Thanks, Giselle. Really good.
Thank you. I'll go down to Annette and then Ben.
No. I'm sorry, I missed the first part of this session, so I hope that this hasn't been covered. My question is for Kevin. A couple of months ago, Kevin, I heard you mention, I think it was in a meeting or something, that you had an advocate go with you to your planning session. When I went for my first planning session, I said to them, $2,500 for a guide dog and that needs to be self-managed. And they said, no, you can't self-manage. And I said, well, I believe I can and I believe I have to for guide dog expenses. And can I speak to someone else about it? So I spoke to someone who was much higher up the rank than this particular lady. And he said, no, you can't self-manage. And I said, why not? And he said, it's too hard. I said, I've managed a business for several years. I'm pretty sure I'm capable of doing this. And he said, no, you can't. So I was pressured by time also. They said I had to have my planning by a particular date. I'm not sure why that was. But where do you get an advocate? And where do you go? I'm quite capable of standing up for myself. But I had nothing to back me up. I had no leg to stand on because it was just my word against their word. And I know they have no training and I... didn't know to research this before I went in there because I wasn't expecting to be told that I wasn't capable of managing my own plan. Like, how do you get an advocate? And how else could I have done this differently?
In my case, I had an advocate and engagement person that's employed by Vision Australia seeing eye dogs. And it made the world of difference for me because they're actually... expert in the processes of the NDIS, and they saved a lot of angst and trouble for me. But Katie's also mentioned you Google Disability Advocacy Finder is another way, and also Emma in her presentation, they've got professional staff who actually will do one-to-one support for people thinking about the NDIS or actually in the process. So unfortunately, you found out a bit late about that, Annette, but certainly going forward. Yeah, that's right. I mean, it does make a huge difference.
Guide dogs also have advocates.
Guide dogs also have advocates as well.
Yeah, sure.
Ben's got a question.
Emma'd like to say something on that, Kevin?
Mm. Yeah, Ben's got a question.
Thank you. Annette, I was also told that I wasn't capable of making my plan. Even though I requested it, once I got a copy of my plan, the person that was made a complaint to the NDIS, and that decision was turned around straight away. So just put in a formal complaint. Don't be scared of the complaint, guys.
Yeah.
324. 2 points. One is the discovery. I managed my own plan, all your core funding, by the way, is tax exempt. So when you're purchasing services by professionals, gardeners, cleaners, what have you, that's all tax exempt. You don't have to pay the GST, which is quite considerable without your entire budget. So you can spread your money further. That's the first thing. You can actually Google that and read the legislation. The other point I'd like to make is a few months ago I was sitting down with a bunch of young blind cricketers. And I asked them, how many of the guys that applied for the NDIS, I think it was 10 or 11 of them, and not one of them did. And I said, well, why not, guys? Oh, well, they weren't aware, didn't really know enough information. But they also felt embarrassed because they just didn't want to ask for support. And I said, but you guys receive a blind pension, don't you? Oh, yeah. But they're not, they wouldn't even consider making that application for the NDIS. And I think that might be something that some of our advocacy organisations might want to take on board about who's eligible and even engaging with younger people, because they just see it as another bureaucratic process. It's overly difficult. And I think there's a little bit of an element of, not knowing, and there's some, some negative attitudes around the whole thing for young people with a disability.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. That's really good. Look,
it's Emma's question.
Yes, we'll go to Emma, and then we're going to have to finish it off. It's 3:25, and the heads of department of the hotel are here. They just want to say a few words. And then we're going to have to finish up. So we'll take Emma and then wind it up.
Thanks, I'll be brief, Kevin. I just wanted to say, to reiterate that yes, BCA definitely has staff who can assist you in your planning meetings. We can do that via phone, so it doesn't matter whether you don't have staff based in your state. We can link in via phone. We do it all the time. And I think an advocate can be extremely important, both in terms of things like the self-management question that you raised in it, but also just in terms of helping with interpretation. You know, it goes much better in terms of planning meetings if you can speak the language of the agency and if you can speak the language of the NDIS. And I think that's where having someone who understands the system, as Kevin said, is really helpful. So, don't hesitate to give us a call or, as Kevin said, contact one of the agencies that perhaps you're more familiar with if you prefer. But I think it is really, really crucial, if you can, to have a support person or an advocate with you. It makes all the difference.
Great.
Thanks
very much, Emma. And I'd like to then close the session, but we could talk about this for a long, long time. It's fascinating, and hopefully we're learning from each other and we'll be much better prepared going forward. It's something that DGHA will have on the agenda permanently, because especially, we've done NDIS today, my aged care is even a bigger challenge for many people, so we'll certainly keep that on our advocacy program. All right, I'll thank the speakers and then I'll hand over to the hotel staff who want to say a few words. So firstly, online, Emma Bennison, BCA, thank you very much. Crystal Malcolm, I hope your baby didn't get disturbed. And also Giselle Meslich, thank you very much. And Katie Butler for your individual view, that was fantastic.
We would just like to say on behalf of Novotel Brighton Beach, thank you for choosing to stay with us. We really do appreciate you being here. You've actually taught us a lot along the way as well. We've been very educated on guide dogs and how these kind of stays and having welcoming everybody, and everybody's background to the Novotel. So thank you again for choosing to stay with us. We hope the conference has been successful and we'd love to welcome you back in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure, as Rowena said earlier. This has been a fantastic weekend and you've gone above and beyond. And we hope your colleague Novotels in other states will try and live up to your standard for us.
Right.
Okay.
One question, do you have a really good vacuum cleaner?
Complained about the dog hair.
They'll get over it.
No, not true.
Thank you. Okay, we're now heading into afternoon tea and home. So, look, just in a final few words, I especially want to thank and recognise Nadia, Greg, Erica, and Rowena, and the other members of the outgoing committee for actually bringing this organisation to life and then helping it grow over those first crucial few years. They've just done a wonderful job, and also Greg and Erica for doing all this technology and the emceeing, or the in-between facilitations. Thank you very much. And also the volunteers. Thank you. And finally, all of you for making the effort. Safe travels.
This has been a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?